I've had burgers well done and rare. Now I got one that ain't even there. She got no response from ringing the bell. And that's when she started to yell.
Why is the beef?
Young man, don't you hear a call? She don't see no beef at all.
Why is the beef?
He stays up all night finding these tracks.
I love him.
Hey, if he can't find them, he makes them.
Yeah.
That's Gary D behind the glass. Thank you. And we've got the Small Houses Inn from Arizona Farm Bureau members. And Stephanie, you're actually the president. You're now in your third term. And Julie, I'm going to hijack this interview
for
just a moment because I've got a question for both Andy and Steph. And you had kind of talked a little bit earlier. You had mentioned the saguaro cactus and how that kind of a, you know, you set your own price for that, but you don't set your price for the beef that's done at the grocery store. And I've been hanging on to this article from February that was posted in the AP out of Des Moines. The U.S. Department of Agriculture forecast for this year projects farmers will make $10 billion less than last year. And you were saying you don't set the price for the beef, but costs for everything are going up. Lance Lillibridge, president of the Iowa Corn Growers Board, says his fertilizer costs are up 300% for herbicides and pesticides. Crop production products are up 100 to 150%. He's expecting to spend $190,000 more in fertilizer alone this year. And he said, you don't set the price at the grocery store. So that just kind of gets eaten. And it's not like he had $200,000 of profit last year that he can absorb this year.
Right. And so the prices of fertilizer is a very scary thing. And also the supply, because of the fact that we're going to have some serious import issues with what's going on in Ukraine, because so much fertilizer is produced in that part of the country. So that's going to exacerbate the inflation costs, but also fuel. People don't remember that. I mean, everything in farming requires fuel. And so the prices that you're seeing for gas, they're even higher for diesel. And diesel is used for everything in farming. And so so those prices are largely being absorbed by the farmer, depending upon what the global and national commodity markets are doing, which they have no control over. But, you know, like in our case with the beef, you know, we sell some direct and we sell some on the commodity markets, and so that's part of that diversification too. Is that you know, there's a place for all of these markets in our food system, because those that are sold in the commodity markets, as we said, are less expensive. We don't set that price because it doesn't actually match what our input costs are. If you sell direct, you have more of a chance of saying, this is how much it cost me to produce this pound of beef, or this is how much it cost me to produce this sweet corn. You know, if you're selling direct at a farmer's market, you can set the price a little closer. But it's definitely going to impact all of agriculture. This next year is going to be a rough year because of the fact that everything that goes into producing food, is the cost is going up. So,
and even though across the board, and American Farm Bureau Federation, giving them some props here, they have an entire team of economists that assess this. Even though across the board you see rise in commodities, cotton, the last time I checked, was $1.30 a pound. I mean, you never hear of that. We get excited.
Your dad was a cotton farmer.
Yes.
What?
Oh, he thinks it's awesome, but he said, Julie, look at the fertilizer prices. And that's kind of what American Farm Bureau assessed, is that.
What was the lowest price per pound you think he remembers?
If Kevin Rogers, former president of Arizona Farm Bureau, is listening to this, he'll probably correct me. But I think at times, even in just the recent decade, it's been in the 50s. And
yeah, it hasn't been that low since it was 50 cents.
Yes, yeah. 60 cents. And so farmers get excited when it's 80 cents. So when you see in the spot markets it's $1.30, you think, oh, well, rich farmers are really going to take it away this year. That's not the case because of that increase of fertilizer and pesticides.
Yeah, for example, beef is everyone, their first question, because the consumers, you know, they go to the store and the beef prices are up. So the first, they're like, oh, you must be doing great this year. You know, I see that beef prices are up in the store, but most ranchers are selling live animals, and we just sold a load a few weeks ago, and we got less than we did last year at this time, and our inputs have doubled. So the prices are about the same or less than they were last year, and then you consider fuel and corn and seed and fertilizer, everything has doubled. So we're actually making half as much money, and you know, we're not making what you see, you know, in the stores. And of course, that's why we're trying to market direct as much as possible. And we're partnering up with someone to try to get a slaughterhouse built ourselves. And it's sort of been a lifelong goal to do that.
And kind of like bring the 140-year-old farm yeah. or ranch back to full circle. And to that point, we've just alluded to it earlier, if you're retail or direct market beef, you can set that price, but they're basically pricing it against the reality of the costs to grow and raise that beef. And then if you don't have enough of these slaughter plants to process the beef, then you have this backlog. So it's kind of a challenge. We can't just overnight convert to retail beef. You can't just overnight convert to a different crop because of all of the infrastructure you have in place on the farm.
Well, essentially, you know, when I go into classrooms and I try to explain certain concepts to kids, you know, I say, you know, you bought that cheeseburger for 99 cents from McDonald's, but it took us 2 years of investment and we're just the first link in the chain.
Yes.
And you just bought, you know, a part of that for 99 cents. So there is definitely a disconnect in between what it costs to produce food in this country and what consumers are paying for it. And so I think that it would be great as we shift to more local supplies and people buying directly from the farmers, whether that's specialty crops or beef or whatever, that the consumer recognize that the price that they see might be like, wow, that's a lot more expensive than the store, but it actually reflects more of how much it costs to produce that food. And I think it gives people a better idea of how much work goes into it and how difficult it is and the cost of the inputs and things like that. So,
and I have anecdotal evidence to this desire to access more local beef. So during the pandemic, when you saw store shelves for the first time in a dramatic way empty, then people were checking out all of the direct market beef producers on Fill Your Plate. And we went from about 25 beef producers that are listed on Fill Your Plate to over 50 in just that 12-month period, because a lot of our beef producers that had not previously been doing the retail sales of their beef said, you know, we got to get in this act, because their network was saying, can't I buy some beef from you?
Well, and during the pandemic, we were getting phone calls from people that we had never sold beef to that were just like, hey, you're a rancher. Do you sell beef? Can we buy beef? And, you know, the food supply chain is incredibly interesting to me, because during all of that craziness, you know, and so we were like, yeah, we sell beef, but, you know, it takes a while to get them ready. You can't just walk out to the field and pick the one you want. And then the other part of it is processing space. And so everybody was backed up. And so it was like, yeah, we'll reserve you some beef. And then 6 months from now, or even 8 or 10 months, it'll be ready, because there aren't enough processors in Arizona to handle that. And, you know, and then you look at people ran out and bought a bunch of beef, and then nobody had a freezer to put it in, because right. then nobody could get a big, you know, because they're like, oh, this is a lot of meat, you know, where do I put it? And so it's like, it was kind of crazy.
Do we ever get this fixed? I know, you know, with what you do with Arizona Farm Bureau as president and all of our county, you know, the other neat thing about the Farm Bureau, it's a grassroots organizations. Really, the county level volunteer leaders, farm and ranchers, are what drive some of this policy. But do we get some of this stuff fixed?
I think after being kind of deep into this whole supply chain issue and the price disparity and things, people see stuff happening in the news about the packers, I think that the people that have the most power to stabilize the food system, both on price and on supply, is the consumer. If they educate themselves on how the food system works and how the supply chain works, then they will make better decisions in terms of, you know, what you buy, where you buy it, how much you're willing to pay for it. The only way we're going to maintain, you know, we can build a lot of local processing in the western states and in Arizona, but unless the consumer demand stays steady for that local supply, those processors are going to have a hard time staying in business, which is why we don't have a lot here now, right? And so the consumer has to basically maintain a strong demand for local food. And if they do that, then we'll see a lot of benefit to the family farm and ranch, no matter what it is that they're growing, because it will eliminate all of the middlemen, basically, in between who's growing the food and who's buying the food.
Have a greater connection to the farmer and rancher, which is one of my goals with what I do with Arizona Farm Bureau, is trying to help the public connect with the farmer and the rancher. So let's flip a little bit to, besides talking about some of these important things in the food system and consumers and their impact and power, you alluded earlier, Andy, to some of the environmental awards you won. Tell us a little bit about that. Why are you guys so focused on conservation?
Well, I mean, no one is more dependent on the natural resources, really, which for some reason, you know, a lot of people don't think about is no one's more dependent on the natural resources than we are. And, you know, I went to school and studied it, and I grew up and I've lived and breathed it. You know, if I ruin the natural resources, my kids won't have a future. Like Stephanie was talking about earlier that, you know, and I was talking about that we always think way ahead. So it's to our benefit to properly manage the natural resources so I can pass it on to my kids and for my own benefit. And it's just, you know, and part of raising good beef is, you know, not just genetics. It's a lot of it goes into handling the beef. And there's a connection between quality beef and how you handle the docility of the animal, how calm the animal is. The calmer the animal is, the better. You know, people get the misconception that we want to chase cattle and run them around. Well, when you chase cattle, you're losing money because you're losing pounds of beef. When you bruise the animals or do anything that can, it lowers the quality of the beef. So it's to our benefit to raise good cattle and
treat them well.
Treat them well and treat our natural resources well. It would be stupid not to, just like any business. You know, you don't want to. That's our product. We don't want to harm our product, you know.
And I can vouch for that one. I've watched you guys move your cattle. Remember when we came out actually to capture some video? And you guys take care of what you've got. And I imagine I'm getting a vibe that Johnny, I think, maybe wants to ranch. Is that right? That's the youngest. So Hannah is their daughter and then Johnny. And Hannah's now in college and Johnny's freshman or sophomore in high school?
He's a freshman, yes.
So
you need to update the pictures on your website.
Yes.
I got the impression they were still under 10 years old.
We just got new ones.
Yeah, actually, Hannah, it's funny. She went away. She's at Nebraska, University of Nebraska, and she's actually becoming more interested in maybe coming back to the ranch. And I think there'll be room, hopefully, for both of them. And as you know, with Stephanie and I, we work as a team. And like I said, they're two opposites. And Johnny's a hard worker but has very little patience for dealing with politics or anything. So Hannah has a lot of patience. She's a good people person. So it's interesting. It'll be exciting to see. But, you know, one of the reasons I was so interested in coming back to the ranch is because my dad encouraged me to go out and do other things and try other things and work other jobs, which takes a lot of discipline for him to be able to do that. But when he knew that it's a tough business and you have to love it for yourself, not for your parents. You have to.
I agree with that.
Know, love doing it. So you know, and that's why we do it. I mean, there's not very many generations or our age
that want to stay in it.
They want to stay in it.
Yeah.